Hello and welcome to This Week in Quality. I am Judy Mosley and I am here with Claire Norman. Claire, how you doing?
Hi, Judy. Nice to see you.
We'll hear you at least. Like, I would love to see you though. Oh, yes, we are here. This is episode 132. We're very excited to be here. Our discussion today will be about hot takes. Claire, do you remember the acronym that Simon wanted us to use?
It's a ridiculous acronym. Oh my gosh. I have no idea how to even pronounce it. He was just like rolling off of Simon's tongue, like right before this call, right? Like, I have no idea how he was doing that. It was just amazing.
Yeah. Okay. Oh, I see Simon. HTTWIQD. So that's hot take this week in quality day. And this is my hot take, but we'll go into others. I can't process acronyms. Like, my brain just won't. My brain won't do it. So, but before we get too far into hot takes. Yes. Oh, sorry, Princess. Oh, Princess, the guardian of the universe, is in the same room with me. So hopefully I won't get too distracted.
Oh my God, Princess tax later, please, Judy.
I know. Oh, yes, I'll post something Princess related. This is a reminder to our audience. Thank you for those joining us live, but also we know that others will be listening to us later. So we're so glad that you're here. This episode is recorded, so you can reference it at any time. Also, remember that this is a Ministry of Testing event. So the code of conduct is in place. Please don't do or say things you'll regret later. So yes, so this week, Claire, what have you seen, or how was your week in quality, and what have you seen in the Motiverse lately?
Well, my week in quality has been really interesting this week because our company recently formed value streams. So that is where you identify every single team that is involved in getting an idea into production, right? So we're now made up of lots of these different little teams. And our head of value stream came to me this week and said, I want to know more about quality coaching because your team is performing really well. Their, you know, change failure rate is really low. We're shipping stuff all the time. And I want to know more about, you know, what good engineering and what good quality coaching looks like, because I think we can do with more of it across the value stream. So I was like, oh my goodness, how exciting is this? This big wig coming over and asking for this information. So my week has mostly been all about putting together a bit of an idiot's guide into what that looks like. And that's not me calling him an idiot. You know, he's self-confessed, says, I have no idea what I'm doing here. So I really need you to, like, you know, put this in plain English for me. So that's been really fun to define my role and engineering to somebody that doesn't necessarily sit within our context. So that's been super interesting.
That is so cool. One, for getting noticed, like being like that your value is, of course, you know your value, but when someone, I like to say that when someone actually notices that the grass is greener, yeah. You're like, yeah, it's greener. It's great.
Yeah. Come join us.
Yeah. We have a good time. So that's really exciting. I love that.
And how about your week, Judy? What's been happening?
This week, well, work-wise, I am learning how to automate for mobile. So I ran my first automated test in cloud, actually, workflow, brand new to me, very excited. So it was just kind of a nice win at the end of the day to put that PR together. Nice. And then, yeah, just other than that, I really loved just what I've been seeing in the community. It seems like there's this huge theme, which it goes exactly with your experience, where it's like making the invisible visible.
Mm.
And how do you do that? And Rosie Sherry had, she had a moment from, she had spent some time with Tristan Lombard and they're getting a talk together, which I'm very excited about. But they, she had mentioned the value of making a list of what you're good at, and then she added some tips in there. So yeah, that was, I don't know. I love that theme. I feel like that's kind of like the theme for the year of making the invisible visible. But
Nice.
yeah. And then otherwise, there's also a fun little action you can take within the community. Rosie also posted how, well, Rosie found another Rosie and she encouraged. She went to give that Rosie a star and also made it a criteria. I don't know, whatever it is that you select stars for, the drop down, and that they were a match. And then that she encouraged everyone else to go find a match in the metaverse. And there is also, for me, there is another Mosley in the metaverse.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm very excited. I was very excited to warm to award Jessica Mosley a star for our last names matching. And we're actually like, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, but we're decently good friends. Like we found each other because of our name. And so we've just started talking online and yeah, we have a good time.
Love that. Love that. I've
Do
not
you
searched for myself in the Motiverse just yet. That sounds weird. I did have a fellow Norman join my team a few months back.
Yeah.
As we were like getting to know each other, it turns out that we were sort of brought up almost in like the next village from each other. So not just another Norman that I'd never met before, but somebody that was like in my local area. So that was, yeah, Norman Conquerors. There you go.
Oh,
Yeah.
that's excellent. Well, I feel like it'd be fun to find just someone completely random and then try to see how you could match. I mean, beyond quality. Yes, we're all in quality. Like that's that is enough, but try to find something else that you're a match for. I think that'd be fun.
That would be fun. Yeah, that would be cool. Try and find your birthday twin at Moticon.
Ooh, that would be good.
It blows my mind every time, you know, because of the maths behind it, that you're more, you know, it's really highly likely that you'll get a birthday twin within a group of 30 people. It's like, how's that possible? Because there are so many days in the year. Go look
Yes.
at maths. It's really interesting.
Okay. Birthday twins. What else? Like, I don't know. I haven't had enough coffee yet. Maybe I'll find my coffee twin and we can stare blankly at each other. Yeah, so I think the only other thing I know I've been kind of taking, yeah. There's been a lot going on in the Motiverse, but Stuart Thomas's The Forgotten Part of Quality, paying attention to production and using observability and logs and alerts. That was a really nice read also.
Nice. What was your personal highlight from that?
So I this article was really good for me because I do kind of leave it up to DevOps. And I think a lot of organizations do, or maybe just the ones I've been a part of, where they just leave it to somebody else. Like, oh, so this department will take care of that. And it's but what I don't like, or what maybe it's not what I don't like, but what I'm always curious about is someone will come into a chat and say at work, they'll say, oh, this error is happening. And I think every time I say, where are you seeing this? Like I want to know what universe you're in. Because I want to see it too. But yeah, maybe there's a way that we can like foster more learning. And I think a big part for me is I need to ask. I need to ask, how are you seeing this? How can I be involved as well? Yeah. Because I think too often I'm like, well, it's so and so's job. They're great at it. But what if so and so's like out sick? So yeah.
Nice. That sparked some ideas for you. That's exciting.
Yeah. All right. Well, do we have anything interesting going on in the chat, maybe?
Simon's posted that link to that Stuart Thomas that you just referenced there, Judy. So that's great. Thank you, Simon. And then there's a lot of matching chat is going on. So who's your birthday twin? Sean reckons we should set up a She-Worn group because of all the links of Sean. I love that. That's great.
That would be fun. Excellent.
We've got quite a few events happening this week and a couple of socials, actually. So I gather tomorrow Richard Adams is hosting a social in Edinburgh at a coffee place. So hopefully someone will pop the link into the chat for us. But that sounds super cool. And down in London, there's a reorganized social gathering on Wednesday next week. So if you fancy popping along to either of those, if you are in the vicinity, get yourself along and have a chat with some people.
That would be so fun.
That would be fun, wouldn't it? It's been a while since I've done a little tech meetup. I need one soon, definitely. Mm-hmm. And then also we have San Francisco meetup is happening later today. And Munich is also happening next week. So whichever part of the world you're in, if you're managing to join any of these events, have a great time. Go chat, go make friends. I love these events. They're great.
Yeah. We have a Cincinnati one that I've been to a couple of times, and it's only online. But yeah, it's good. It's good to be with people who are close by. I mean, I'd love to go to London, though. 100%.
London would love to have you.
Oh, the food. Like, we won't go in this direction today, but we've had a whole snack discussion. Like, I want to do a snack tour. Like, it's going to be all about the food.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay. So it is about 17 minutes in. So if you'd like to join the stage to share your hot take. We are discussing hot takes today. So you can join. I think there's a button that says join the queue, possibly. I missed the raise hand button because that was actually, I don't know, that made sense in my brain. But yeah, you can join us and we'll invite you up. And yeah, Claire, you were the one that wanted to do hot takes. So what did you want to, yeah, go for it.
It was kind of inspired by a couple of people in my life, actually. So a colleague on my team ran a retrospective on this particular theme a couple of weeks back, which was awesome. Also another member of our community, Callum Akehurst, Ryan, absolutely loves a hot take and they're always like dappled across the community. And I thought, you know, these things just generate really cool discussions because you can frame something as a hot take, but actually you tend to find that people will either 100% agree or 100% disagree with you. So it might seem like a really spicy take, but actually you've kind of got a point behind it. So I'm hoping that some of those opinions will generate some good debate today. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you have one personally?
Well, the one that we chatted about in our team that generated quite a lot of discussion actually was this idea of deleting all of your bugs off the backlog if they are older than 6 months. Now, we got into a little bit of a topic around, you know, sort of timeline, I suppose. But what really surprised me was probably the majority of my team were sort of really nervous about this, you know, sort of really against it. But this is something that I completely agree with because I see this huge backlog that you have as kind of like you chuck all of these things in a sack and you're like carrying them along on your back as you're doing all of this feature work. And that's not healthy for a team. It's not healthy to be dragging all of that weight all of the time. And if you get to a certain point, 6, 9, 12 months, whatever it is, and you've not looked at that ticket, just get rid of it. It's baggage that you just do not need. If someone was really upset about this bug, they would have been getting in contact or, you know, raising chaos somewhere. So you don't need it. Just get rid. And our product owner actually was really worried about doing this. Yeah, but it's my precious backlog. And it's like, you don't need to keep the stuff. It's okay. The backlog can be filled with more valuable things. If, you know, something that's been sat there for so long is not valuable anymore. So let's swap it out for something that is.
Mm-hmm. That's
one vintage that's... song says, excellent.
Oh my gosh. So I had a manager years ago where he didn't delete issues, but he used, I guess I can say this on air, the poo emoji. But, and he had a category that was just like, we won't do that. And he was very clear, like, yes, this has been reported and we're not going to do that. And I think I love the idea of deleting them. And I also feel that angst where I think for me, it's like, if someone wrote it up, they want it to be tracked. But also I would almost like a ticket graveyard. So that way we could at least explain why we're not going to do it, or if it's so low priority, you know, do we keep it only for the history of it? Yeah. But I mean, setting fire to the whole thing, that would be kind of, what is it? Burning the boats? We're just going to burn the boats. Oh my goodness.
Yeah, well, Sean Vernier makes a really good point in the chat, actually. He says 80% agree. I'd prefer archive over delete, mm-hmm. because I want to know that it was raised prior if it was ever an issue in the future, which is a really good show. I like that.
Yeah, that's a good point. Stick it on vinted. Did I miss context or... Oh, that's so funny. Yeah, Gary says, we have one product manager, very pro, keeping the backlog clean. The other took about 6 months to convince. Well, at least they were convinced. Some people are never convinced. So,
what about you, Judy? What's your hot take?
So, my hot take is... that I actually really like manual testing. And I do think that manual testing has a real value. And the, like, I do a lot of automation. I'm in charge of the automation from where I am, and also mentoring others in automation. But also in every project where I've been pointed, where I've been asked to do testing for it, there is that moment where I look at everything as a whole, and I see everything as a whole, and I can see where it's gone awry, you know. And even though we may have automation for it all, or maybe we haven't updated our automated test, I don't know. There's some things it just feels a little bit cleansing when I can manually go through it and be like, okay, it's good. Or, oh, I found this thing that we've completely missed. Yeah. Do I want to always manual test? No, that would be frustrating. But I do have a soft spot for manual testing. So
100% agree. That's great. And it looks like Gary agrees with you too. Hot take. I moved from automated to manual testing because it is much more creative.
Mm. Yeah, there's a lot in manual testing that you just can't automate. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, pressing the back button on the browser, or maybe you can do that and I just haven't learned it yet. But, you know, Yeah, there's just, I mean, and you get to act a little crazy also with the manual. You know, rage clicking. That's like if you're having a bad day, just rage click something. You'll find a bug and you'll feel better.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if I automated a rage click test, they'd be like, "What are you doing?" You're like, "Well, I'm testing."
So what you're saying really then, it's a mindful practice, right? So it's a stress reliever as well. So
Yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. And it manual testing for me, it also it's a type of feedback loop where I can say, I've done all I can. It's like when the automation has run and I've done my test cases and I've run the reports and I've been to every corner that I know of, and that's when I'm ready to release, because if there's something I've missed, it's something I'll learn. So if it goes out into production, hopefully it doesn't do anything crazy, but it lets me know where my edges are, and it gives me feedback on what I need to learn still. So, oh, 80, 80 in the chat is like manual.
I know, right? But I use the term manual. I hate it too, but it's the only term that everybody knows what you mean, even though it's a really
Yes.
disgusting word. We all know what we mean when we say that. I know.
Yeah. What other terms are? I know I've heard it from someone else that there's other terms for it, but I can't remember.
I don't know. I guess it's human testing, isn't it? It's Yeah.
Yeah, I'll think about it.
What other hot takes are out there? I can see you all buzzing away in the chat. Come join us on stage and
Oh,
share
please.
your
Yeah.
outrageous views, and we'll either 100% agree or 100% disagree and kick you out. No, I'm kidding. We'll have a really cool discussion. Please join.
Well, Claire, while we're waiting to hear from some people, I think you'd mentioned before we hopped on stage that there was something else. Oh, well, you can share your story now, or 80 has decided to join us. What should we do? What do you think?
Oh, what do we reckon? Let's bring AD on stage.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
AD, tell us.
Can you hear us okay, 80?
Oh no, we can't hear you, AD.
Eddie. 80, we can't hear
About
you.
now?
Oh, there we go.
Right, it does something weird, this wish to say. It defaults to the band MacBook's microphone, and I've actually got a blue snowball. And half of the time it stays on the blue snowball, and half of the time it defaults back. So sorry about
Needs
You're
more
fine.
manual testing.
So I'll start again. Hello, my fellow humans.
Eddie.
Yeah, so instead of manual testing, just say testing. I wrote an article about it. You can go read it. So that's the hot take on manual testing. I actually have a different hot take. I'd be interested to see if anybody does actually disagree with this. So I think it's something we don't think about. My hot take is, as quality professionals and testers, we don't spend enough time thinking about thinking. We don't spend enough time learning to think. Literally, everything we do is based on our thinking. And we are continuous learners. That is just part of the makeup of a quality professional. We are continuous learners. We look at other stuff. Me and Scott did a whole workshop, and we did a talk, and we have a workshop and a thing about being a generalist and how we can learn all different areas. But to me, the longer I've been in the profession or the craft, the more I believe the quality of software is only as good as the quality of the thinking that goes into its design, its creation, and its testing. And all that leads to a quality product at the end of it. But if we don't take the time to understand how we think, if we don't learn to think in different ways or have techniques, whether that's heuristics, mnemonics, we're doing ourselves and we're doing our craft a disservice. There are so many different thinking techniques out there. And we go, oh yeah, scientific theory. We come up with a theory and then we do experiments to test it. Like, I know about scientific theory, but we're not looking at how the mind works in scientific theory. How do you get to a theory? How do you come up with an insight that gives you a theory? Like, the more we learn, the more we have to think about, because knowledge is great, don't get me wrong, everybody needs knowledge, but it's how you apply the knowledge that makes knowledge valuable. And you can see in politics, there's a lot of very knowledgeable people out there, but they're applying it in a very deceitful way without knowing how to think, how that knowledge can be applied in contexts and situations. We're doing ourselves a disservice. That's why literally I've spent the last 18 months researching different ways of thinking, and I'm trying to write a book that like pulls lots of information together. And I wrote an article on different mindsets we can have. And there was like 11 mindsets in that. And now I'm up to 12. I'm trying to work on a model to share with people to see if it resonates. But yeah, that's my hot take is we think a lot, but we don't think about thinking enough. And Alexander's put a great list of different ways of thinking: system thinking, critical thinking, heuristic. Yeah, cool.
Yeah, that's so good. I'm wondering, for yourself, how do you test your own thinking? Like, how do you think about thinking for yourself?
So you can be framed a lot of, like, we try and address ambiguity and bias. And the way we do that is, the way I do that is, I'll look at something, I'll think about it, and then I will try and put myself in a different mindset to question the thinking that I've just done. And depending on the context of the situation, I might do that from multiple perspectives. So I might look at it from a very critical standpoint. So what do you mean? What, like, I've used certain words in what I'm typing an email to something, or response, or I'm giving feedback on something. I will look at the words and go, right, have I written that with a bias towards myself, or am I thinking about the whole? Have I written that because of what I like? And that's a purely personal opinion. So, like, when I give people feedback, I will go, I think this, which is my personal opinion, you could also look at it like this. So I try and challenge my thoughts, which is probably why it's going to take me so long to write this book. Because every time I write something, I then work through and question how's that going to be interpreted by different groups. I mean, if I ever get close to a first draft, I'll be reaching out to a group of people in the community who I trust and who I feel are knowledgeable and can give me, like, brutally honest feedback, and go, right, this is the essentially the initial draft. Tell me what you think and be brutally honest, and tell me what don't work, and tell me where I've missed assumptions, and tell me where I'm being too harsh, or whatever it might be. But yeah, like, thinking techniques, I've got loads of those, and I don't want to just be a list. I want it to be, well, here's the thing, where this is what it's about, this is what it does, these are the types of areas of testing that can be applied to, and these are the types of things you would do with it when you're testing in those areas. I don't want it to be a reference book to, oh yeah. I mean, I did the periodic table of testing, which has got loads of stuff people can just look at and go, oh yeah, I haven't thought about that for a bit, I'm gonna do that. I want it to be more of a sat on people's desks and go, right, what am I missing here with this thinking? Like, let me have a look at this book. What thought techniques for this type of testing can I do? And I think it's gonna take me longer to write the reference section at the back for people to find so quickly than it is to write the book. Well, yeah, so 2038, look out for my book. You know, when AI is doing everything, there's going to be a book come along that everybody's going to ignore because they just use AI now. But that's why it's important to think. The differentiator between what AI can do and us is how we think about the output of AI. You can have AI look at AI output and criticize it. It's just one big loop. And it's the human way of thinking about stuff and what they've missed. AI don't have empathy. It doesn't have feelings. It's not going to be concerned for a group that's not been thought about. It's just going to spout out what everybody else has done up to that point in human history. It's not going to innovate. It's not going to come up with something new. Even if you say, oh, give me something brand new nobody's ever done, guess what? Somebody's already done it. Otherwise, it wouldn't know about it. So, yeah, that's what's going to differentiate top quality professionals from AI, is they will look at what AI's done and go, this is why that ain't going to work. This is why that isn't appropriate to this situation. Yes, AI's outputted 1,000 test cases, but guess what? There's only like 3 in there that are high risk, high value. All the rest of them are noise, and you're just going to waste a lot of time.
I absolutely love that, AD. Did that feel quite cathartic? It felt like you were waiting to give that rant to somebody.
Oh, no, I've definitely given that rant to quite a few people in person. I've not done it to an audience.
We love it. We need more of it.
I think if you look at the last 3 or 4 articles I've written on I Think, Therefore I Test, which is about the mindset one, lessons learned from great Western philosophers and how you can apply that to testing, I think there's clues in there that like, I think the way we think is like the way forward, including having diverse teams and stuff like that, because I wrote something about that as well. But yeah, I think it's been implied in the background, but yeah, I've not done it to an audience or had a... Was that a rant? I thought I was giving a measured argument why we should all be thinking, but it could be...
It was, but it was very passionately delivered. So okay,
I'm happy to have a rant on a Friday.
Yeah. I noticed that Gary Hawkes has joined off stage, so I wonder if Gary would like to come in and either give us some thoughts on what AD's just said there or kick us off with a new hot take.
How you doing?
Hello.
Yeah, well, I think what AD was saying, I 100% agree. So I'm going to be in that camp with it about the thinking, because I think that there's so many times that I think Fridays are a good day where you take a step back and say, am I approaching these things the right way? Is there a better way of doing it? Because you can get swept up in your workload and the things that you're having to do and become almost like rhythmical in, you know, when things are coming in and you're testing it, organizing stuff and whatever, that having to take that step back is like, is this working? Is there another way to do this? And you know, is there another approach? And that thinking about thinking, you know, is something I think that you just benefit from doing regularly. I've got quite a controversial hot take.
Give it to us, Gary.
Right. I think that developers using AI agents doesn't speed up the delivery.
Ooh.
So I'll throw that in there. There's a little bit of based on experience there, because I've seen, and again, it could be down to I could be throwing some of developers under the bus here, but thinking about from what I've witnessed is, I think in the last 6 months we've been sort of adopting dev agents and so on, and we've our QA team over the last few years has kind of reduced. And so we have like 3 projects and 4 testers overall. And there's probably 12 developers, I think, across all of those projects. And you would think, wow, if that's the case, then they're going to be using these AI agents and absolutely hammering us with like loads of things to cover. And what it appears to be doing with the developers is that the developers would be taking pride in each aspect of their work equally. So the design, the understanding of stories and the coding, and they'd be taking pride in each aspect of it. And the trouble is now what I'm seeing is, and obviously lots of developers are differently, because you can get like the developers that we have in our organization where you've got the ones that are almost vibe coders, love it so much and kind of use it for absolutely everything. And then you've got the ones, especially the sort of C++ developers, who see kind of C++ as a dark art are very hesitant to sort of like let agents loose. And I'm seeing with the kind of like shift with different people where the sort of the focus is on producing code and understanding stories. I will use a bit of AI to understand the story, and then I will get the AI to produce the unit tests. The unit tests that are being produced, they're producing to unit test the code that you've produced. They're not necessarily right. What you've developed will work, but it may not necessarily be right. And the design of it may not be right either, because if you've got like competing like components and interfaces that are not part of the context that you've like built this code from, then basically from that side of things, I think our jobs have never been more important now, because of that context is just to deliver that kind of trust in. And people are referring to like agents. So this is like turning into a whinge now. People are referring to agents as if it's a thing in charge. You know, they'll talk about like, we use augment. We'll say, well, I got augment to do that. And then, no. You are still responsible. Mm. You know, augment isn't responsible. You are. And that's, so that's what I'm seeing. And we have like one tester that's like managing between two projects, and I will come in and help out if ever she's overloaded, and she's never overloaded because they're like almost all of their work is, you know, some of their work is in progress, and then I've got all meant to do that. I didn't like what it did, so I undone it, and then I tried it again to do that, and it's like, well, we'll do it self then if you didn't like it, you know. it's yeah. So there you go. That's my hot take. Is that it actually slows things down. Hit me with it.
AD, can we get 100% agree or disagree from you? What do you think?
I think it's slightly contextual, but I'm lacking 95% agree. I think it's like the 1,000 test cases I was talking about. If you're generating 1,000 test cases quickly, 98% of them are going to be completely useless or just repetitions of other ones. And yeah, and I've seen that with developers. They go, oh, like I could have written this in a day, but I got AI to do it. It took it 20 minutes, but I took 4 days debugging it. So it was really helpful for that first 20 minutes because I could have a coffee.
Now, to be fair to the devs, today I was in a meeting where one of the devs literally used it to dissect an architectural problem and come up with a marked up document that explained the full architecture of the way something worked now and all diagrammed and everything, and then how it's going to work in future. Now that, when I saw that, I said, brilliant, keep doing that. That's gold, because that's seeing diagrams like that and architectures will bring everyone together. So that is fantastic. Keep doing stuff like that. So there are, I'm certainly not an anti-AI. There's definitely things that we can use it for that we'll hugely benefit from. But yeah, but there are some aspects where I actually kind of see that AI agents is that there's a push in one direction where we just think we're going to go faster and faster and faster and faster. And then sanity is going to kick in at some point. And there's going to be a middle ground that we like. I'm doing hand signals and there's no camera on me.
You can see them, Gary.
Just pretend you can see my hands waving.
I do exactly the same thing, Gary.
Yeah. So yeah, I think there's going to be a middle ground that it will all settle at. But it's kind of like a murderous frenzy at the moment, I think, with everyone charging in particular directions just to see how much the technology can do. And then, yeah, and then it will come back to some medium. But I think we're in that early stage. Even right now, it's all about, oh, the models aren't doing it. Oh, let's get better models. Oh, let's keep pushing it. Let's keep pushing to see how far we can take this. And then there's going to be a point where it settles and it's like, no, we can only go so far. And because we've got humans to worry about,
yeah,
you know, in the middle of this, and eventually it will settle down.
Interesting. Really cool thoughts there, Gary. Thank you. I noticed, I think it was in the middle of your speech, Gary, that Sean joined backstage. So I wonder if, Sean, would you like to join us and let us know your thoughts?
Hi, yes. So I definitely have a hot take that is building on what AD and Gary were saying prior, which is, my hot take is QA doesn't own quality. Leadership does. Management does. QA can advocate for it. We can show the risks. We can show the issues. We can show the gaps. We can quantify and qualify them, make it visible. But leadership controls the resources. They control the investment. If they're not willing to invest in quality, to prioritize it as an organization, to build it into the culture and the product, if they're not doing that, quality is going to be poor, regardless of QA efforts, right? And way back at the beginning, right, that's why I think old bugs should be archived. In my experience, QA sometimes needs that I told you so moment. We need to be able to point back and say, we raised this as an issue 6 months ago, and now you lost a customer because of it, right?
That's so interesting. Honestly, the first thing that comes to mind is something I've been meditating on for a while, but emotional responsibility and what emotions am I responsible for and what emotions are other people responsible for? And I shouldn't take on anyone else's emotions that aren't my responsibility. And I wonder if we could apply that to quality as well, because I mean, honestly, I don't think I've ever heard anyone say, yeah, it's leadership's job. And thinking about it, they are doing the hiring, they are gathering the resources, like they have more power, essentially. And so who owns quality at the end of the day? I think I'm gonna have to process that one, Sean, because yeah, it's I can do my best and I can spark the conversations and bring in the tools and have discussions and work with developers, but if at the end of the day, people are still coming back to me and saying things aren't right. Yeah. I'm going to have to think about that one. Anybody else? Does anyone else have any thoughts?
Yeah, I was going back to the, and I said it in the chat, the kind of I told you so moments. Deep down in me, there is that, you know, but obviously it's like, how do you get the I told you so across in a way that is collaborative? So because like I say, is that I've been, I'm sure we have all have been in there like loads of times where we've analyzed the risk and we've highlighted the risk of something. I've actually been in a product and a refinement session and literally quizzing and slowing the whole process down, quizzing the product manager. It was like, yeah, but why is this useful? What's the customer actually going to get out of this? Actually, I think this feature is misleading to the customer, and kind of like pushing back. And they've said, well, I think I still want to go with it because I think it's going to be something useful. And it's like, okay. So it's kind of stored there. And there's a bit of me that's thinking there's going to be an I told you so coming out of this. But then it's kind of more like, okay. And if it does go wrong, it's like, okay, we went with it. We supported it. Maybe in hindsight, we should have looked at the things that we were discussing earlier. So it's always a we. It's not an I. It's always a we. Maybe when we were having this discussion between us, maybe we should have looked at some of these things a bit deeper. So yeah, but definitely I feel it. Definitely.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I definitely feel that. And don't get me wrong, I hate I told you so moments. They're very cathartic, not gonna lie. Very cathartic and validating. But at the same time, like, it means that something went wrong that could have been avoided, you know, with a little more due diligence or communication effort or whatever it may have taken at the time. And it's like, ah, I just, you feel bad, but you feel kind of good at the same time.
Yeah, I ain't gonna lie. Yeah, it does feel good. Yeah.
Well, I think too, so I have teenagers. One bird has already flown the nest and the two are, they're dangling their feet. But a lot, I know this is parenting, but I think it applies very much where you let people learn what's important. So if something isn't working for them, you let them feel it. And then you come back later and you can say, hey, is this working for you? Like, what can we change? Are you willing to troubleshoot? Are you willing to experiment? Are you willing to try out new ideas? And yeah, as a parent, I definitely have that feeling of like, I know how to do it better. Like, let's just do it. But at the same time, it's okay. It's okay when things go wrong too, because if the environment is set up to where people are meant to learn versus people being blamed for things going wrong, then it's a failure. Okay, what can we learn? What's valuable? What's not? Yeah, I think because I'm gonna fail, I'm gonna miss something, I'm gonna do something wrong. So I want to make sure that everyone can feel safe in the failure, even if it's someone that is, you know, provides my payroll, maybe.
No, I agree with that. I actually kind of like that as an analogy of quality as parenting, right? And kind of the cool thing about doing it professionally is you have multiple shots, right? Like, the more experience you gain, the more you see organization to organization, the more you kind of see the same mistakes being made on a cycle, and you get better at communicating those mistakes and better at helping the organization realize and mitigate them over time, where you're like, well, I saw the last organization make this mistake, or two organizations ago made this mistake, and I was completely unprepared. The second organization I saw make this mistake, I tried to communicate but didn't get it across. So this time, I can do it better, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, Demi's made a really interesting point in the chat, actually. Going back just to, I think, maybe a couple of speakers ago, she's verbalized something that was in my head that wouldn't come out, around how testers are very aware of ownership of the product, where the rest of the team doesn't necessarily feel this. So because we are so involved in the quality of the product, you know, we feel accountability for that, even if it is a whole team responsibility, while the rest of the team is less focused on it. So yeah, I think there is also that element of, we really care about this, you know, quality is care, the new Motiverse motto. So yeah, I think we really feel it compared to others in the team sometimes when things go wrong, and we really want to prevent that from happening again.
Yeah, that's so good. I feel a little bit bad because there's so much going on in the chat and we've had such great conversations.
I know, right? I've missed so much of the chat. I'm so sorry, everyone.
Yeah, we need a transcript, I think, because
absolutely.
Yeah, some of this is wonderful. Neil says, it's not just where it is being used for development work. It's so important that PRs are critically reviewed and not just using AI tools. Sure, we can make use of AI tools, but it needs to be a human to ensure what's being implemented actually makes sense. Something I've been thinking about a lot, which I'd love to hear anyone's thoughts on this, but where does confidence fit in with AI? And where does skepticism, I feel like I have to carry this strange mix of, I want to be confident of my team members, of myself, and how we're using AI, and I have to be skeptical of our use of AI. And it's, I don't know, it feels like such a strange state. So I'm wondering if anyone feels the same.
Yeah, any final thoughts from our three guests on stage for that one?
I just typed that skeptical is a great mindset to use with AI, along with like the empathy mindset, because they're like being skeptical of what it says is pretty a given because of how much they hallucinate and make crap up. But yeah, that and empathy, I think, are the two good ones, but skeptical is a great one to use with AI.
Yeah, I've gotten called out multiple times in the last couple of years for being anti-AI. And it's like, no, I'm skeptical. My job is to be a professional skeptic. I'm skeptical of any new tool you give me that I've never seen work before. That's what you pay me for, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Professional skeptic, I love that.
Yeah, I agree. I think the thing is like whenever we use tools, sometimes we forget that those tools have got code as well. And, you know, and it's code that's not under our control and it's not under our visibility. And a lot of the times it's not. Or so if it's under our visibility, it's certainly not under our remit to go and review it. But that's the thing. That's why we have to be skeptical. I remember right at the beginning of the process of like when we was adopting these agents, same as you, Sean, I was accused of almost like being anti-AI. And I said, I'm not anti-AI. I'm using it myself to review some of your stories, for example, and alongside my reading of the stories to see if there's anything that I would have missed. But I'm just anti-risk. And if I see technology just being adopted in a vibe coding way of like and being advocated for to say, and this happened was like at the beginning, is like take some stories and literally let it go and see if it can code it. I'm like, no, I'm not going to support that. I'm not going to support that when we've got timelines to so yeah, absolutely be skeptical and our job is to, I think it was one of the last sort of like Leading with Quality, one of the workshops there was like communicate risk. And that's what we do.
That's great, Gary. And thank you all to all of our guests that joined us on stage. AD for getting us thinking about thinking. Gary for helping us analyze developer productivity with AI. And Sean for getting us thinking about, do leadership own quality? Judy, any final thoughts?
Oh, I think I'm just going to have to process all of this because there's so much that's been said. That's so good. Yeah, thank you all for bringing your thoughts. This has been really fantastic. Anything for you, Claire?
It was a brilliant episode. Thank you all for indulging me. Great hot take episode.
Yep. All right. Well, it is time. And yeah, appreciate everyone joining us. And if you have another hot take that you either didn't get a chance to say, or you just one pops in your head later, you can create a moment in the Motiverse, or write an article, or write a LinkedIn post. You can always tag me or anyone else and be like, hey, boost this. We need to talk about this. But yeah, let's keep the conversation going. So thanks, everybody, and have a great week.
Thank you, everyone.